This lesson is really, we're going to do a quick refresher because it's much more about the conversation since you've all, you know, put some version of this or at least started to put some version of this in place. But we really want to anchor you to the key ideas and then spend some time, as I mentioned, really talking through how this process has been working in your firm. Where are there any breakdowns? Where is it going really well? And we can just right, collaborate and learn from each other as we go through that process. So that's business planning today. As always, feel free to drop questions, and Neil, no problem. The dog's just got to go to her doctor's appointment, so I get that for sure. No worries. We all have priorities, man. Got to take care of the puppies. You may remember this. We call it a proven system for managing process and performance. You hear us say a lot here at Limitless that the system will save you, which is code for you have to build a system that's bigger than the resistance that you will face. And the resistance when it comes to planning and priorities is usually us, sometimes our team, right? Getting the momentum. I was just in, we're doing some private client work with a couple billion-dollar firms. And I kid you, two firms and then one of our leaders in the span of 1 week in three calls said in the same but different ways, we've been talking about this a lot for a while. We just haven't gotten around to it. So you guys are better, and so especially those of you on the call are better than average at executing. You've all done a good job of that this year, but managing performance is really about managing clarity and momentum, ours and the team. So we want those processes to be proactive, process-oriented, priority-focused, and then what we're trying to do is put in a professionally managed layer, even if it's a light layer, right? So that we're not, that one of the founders in his 80s of one of these billion-dollar firms said, but we freestyled, soloed it for so long, why can't we just keep doing that? And I'm like, well, you know, your size, it's a little frowned upon to just wing it every single day. You're not there, but a lot of firms grow into compounding complexity and problems because we don't get that clarity. We don't deal with operations or staffing or efficient growth or right-sizing the client base or the right kind of marketing along the way. So we can grow by adding assets and clients, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're growing into the kind of business and leaders that we want. So just remember this model. You can go back to the vision lesson, the action and accountability lesson, and then don't forget there's that strategic planning lesson that goes even deeper. You want to do offsites with your team, right? Do SWOT, sort of, there's a whole PowerPoint deck you can put together. But what we talk about here is having a simple plan is the best kind of plan. Because that's usually the one you might act on.
Yeah. And I think in terms of a simple plan, right, a one-page plan to map out the vision and what you've done here, one of the things that I find useful is, right, if we're really clear on what we're going, the decisions are easy. So if we know where we want to be in 3 year, 1 year, and currently, then we can take a look and map out what are all those things that we need to do in order to get here. And I think one of my favorite exercises here is kind of looking at that 3 year goal and strategy first, right? When I think about strategy and planning, they're a little bit different. So as larger organizations, you're going to be much more focused on what's the 3 year strategy, right? How do I execute in my marketplace? What's going to differentiate us? And how do we then translate that into goals in order to get there and then break that down into more tangible 1 year goals? Like, what are the milestones to get from point A to point B? And what's it going to take to do that? Whether that's revenue or AUM or average client, but also kind of who our ideal clients are. And you guys are going to go deeper into all of the different areas of the business that we'll talk about in that quarterly business review. But I think one of the reasons that I love something as simple as this is I can't tell you the number of larger firms that I've gone into and they've set their goal for revenue and AUM and new clients. And then they didn't do the math to see if those things actually aligned, right? So actually backing into the numbers and saying, hey, okay, if it looks like this, how do we get there? And as a larger firm, sometimes there's more. I think we have a goal planning exercise as well, Stephanie, where you can actually break down, hey, if we brought in 10 new top tier clients and 5 new mid-tier clients, what does that look like? So some more advanced planning kind of take place here. But really,
we tend to look at things like, oh, I want to grow revenue 20% a year, which is great, but it tends to be this arbitrary goal that we stick up on the wall because it seems like a good number. So to Natalie's point about where the opportunity is, as we look at those 3-year goals or beyond, we can use those to then reverse engineer. If my goal is to have X revenue in 3 years and 25 less clients, that means, right, my revenue per client's going to need to be X. What's it going to take? I'm going to need to see a 47% increase in revenue per client over a 3-year time horizon. When we start our planning for year one, year two, year three, now we're like, okay, this year, now I can break it down even further. Now it's a lot easier for my brain to go, oh, okay, and we need 27 clients at, 9,700, and our average run rate is 18. So we actually only need 9 new clients a year, which is about 2.5 a quarter. Now it's going to take, right? I need 2.5 clients at this higher average to hit my goals. Well, that gives me and my brain a lot more specificity to work with. Now it's not like, ooh, go grow. Brain goes, womp, womp, womp. Charlie Brown's mom, no idea what you mean. Now we can break it down. Now we can look at our annual plan and go, okay, if that's my goal for the year, if that's the growth bucket goal, right? Remember those top 3 goals for each year, right? Let's call that a top practice goal. What am I going to need to do in Q1 to really make sure I'm laying the track to get that done? Is it a client-based analysis? Is it raising the minimum? Is it a fee increase? Is it hiring someone? Is it updating the marketing copy and building a script? And if you go into the workbook, which we're going to show you very briefly in a moment, each quarter we then look at what do we need to do over 30, 60, and 90 days to get there. So now it's not like one big blobby goal. It's okay. In the first 30 days, I'm going to need to do this. In the next 60 days, I'm right. And by the end of the quarter, I'm going to have the client analysis done. I'm going to have decided on the new fee. I'm going to have published my minimum on the website, and I will have had that conversation with, 10 of our clients. Right now, it's really easy to break down what do I need to do each week. Think about your Mondays. With what I spend my time on. One of the biggest challenges I've noticed in conversations is if we don't know what we're spending our time on working on the business and have time blocked out, when we get a 2-hour block, we're like, I don't know. And we waste half the time. If you've got 2 or 3 hours blocked every Monday morning or afternoon to work on business priorities, you've got your team meetings, you've got limitless calls, and you've got right work on the business priorities that should be really focusing your Mondays. It should be really straightforward for you and your team, right? Alan, Neil should be able to be like, and here are the things we need to get done this week to stay on track with the plan. If we sit down each week and go, oh, what should I do this week? The odds are 95% we're not going to do very much, right? Remember that the odds of change are stacked against us 9 to 1. Travis, we are 95% hardwired to do what we did yesterday today. That means we got a 5% window. Right, of operating agency that we're trying to insert ourselves in. And that's why these processes are so important. There's like those, in the superhero movies where someone puts themselves or like the jaws of death under the door to keep it open. That's what planning and priorities is. So we don't just get stuck on the overwhelm wheel, right, of go do run the shop every day. So you're very familiar with the one-page plan at this point. Really, as we're sitting there and looking at the 3-year goals and you're doing your strategic planning. We really want to break that down into a 1-year plan that when you hit January, you're ready to say, I'm clear. I know what priorities I need to focus on. And I know how we're going to apply work, time, energy, and capital in this next 90 days to get this ball down the field. And that's where we did the coaching roadmaps at the beginning of the year, right? To look at those quarterly priorities and then the quarterly business review workbook. Which again is a kind of a professionally managed process. You can skinny it up if you've got fewer people, but it's a really good exercise to go through because it's a forcing mechanism for asking yourself the questions that will create awareness and write some of these other big ones.
So as
Sorry.
we talk about creating, I think we skipped the one page plan, but I think you all have those in place, right? What's the plan for the year and how are we executing? I think one of the important pieces is as you grow, the question becomes not how am I executing, but how can I then delegate out to the team and then putting out a quarterly business review in place to assess all of those different areas. What's our financial performance and are we on track? What's our marketing performance? Are we meeting those goals, why or why not, right? Look at the practice performance, which cover things like teams and talent, right? Planning for, you think about those goals we talked about in terms of number of new clients and average revenue per client, you can actually start beginning to calculate when do I need another advisor? When do I need an associate? advisor to come in and to support the team. So, right, really digging into how the firm is performing overall, but also, right, starting with what are my personal and professional and performance goals, right? Because if we don't set goals for ourselves, the business is going to run us instead of us running it. So what are the actions that we're going to take in each of these areas? So having a systematic process to review them, evaluate what's working, what's not, what needs to change.
Yeah. And I think to Natalie's point, right, personal and professional are not, or practice and professional are not the same thing, right? You might want to increase the client size, but you might say, hey, I want to be a more effective leader. I, you know, want to get out of, right, doing, you know, revenue draining things 50% of the time. I want to get my CFP, right? It's what are you doing personally as a professional leader, founder, right, to drive yourself and the organization forward? So just a little point of clarification on that one.
Yeah. And I think the big structure behind this is progress, right? How do we keep the firm, not just us as leaders, but the firm making systematic progress again and again? And I think as you grow, creating that structure and progress is not just about you, but how do I engage my team in that process? What's their role in strategic planning and business planning and execution? How do I keep them motivated and engaged? So how do I engage them in this entire process so that they're as invested in these changes in the business as I am? And everyone on the team is working in lockstep to make that incremental progress and create habits out of it, right? So it's really sort of drilling from the top down in terms of moving towards a goal, not just as an individual, but as an organization as a whole, and who's going to be responsible for those things. And how do you keep them motivated and engaged and on point throughout that process?
Yeah, one of the things I've heard a lot over the years is where I think this planning process, or right, some version of it for your firm works, to Natalie made a really good point, which is we don't just want our momentum to be good. Ultimately, we want to leverage the team so that they can move the ball down the field in increasing with increasing autonomy independent of us. So we talked a fair bit this year about, right, once you've got those priorities in place, you can put a system in place where the team knows what's expected. We're doing it. We call it scoping a project. We sit down, we're like, hey team, this is what we're working on this quarter. Here's what we're going to need to do in 30, 60, 90 days, right? We talk about who's going to do what. We put those, right, tracking and accountability mechanisms in place. And now what happens, which is the holy grail, is what I always hear from advisors and founders is, as long as I'm in the car with my hands on the wheel and the foot on the gas, everything goes. But the second that I take my eyes off the wheel, or I take my foot off the gas, we steer left or right, or the car stops going. I got to get in and push the car. I got to create the clarity and the momentum and the accountability. That's because you don't have a process for momentum inside the firm. Professionally managed firms, even when they get too bureaucratic, right? That's the downside. That's not where you want to go. Right. You know, at Genworth, we would do, you know, 27 versions of the strategic planning deck every year. And I was like, it really never needs to take this long. Like, this is insane. Right. But it also maybe doesn't take 2 seconds. Right. There's, again, for your size, team, and style, there's really a sweet spot. And what matters is that we have a process for managing change in the organization. That's what we're really talking about, identifying our vision and goals, identifying gaps that need to be accounted for, selecting the priorities and the projects we're going to work on to fill those gaps, and then monitoring and managing that process over time to make sure that the flywheel's moving and people are doing what they need to do. When you get it going, the process moves things down the pike. It's not Neil or Travis or Leanna or John, right? The process is there. So we can invoke a lot of change in a firm without change fatigue when we're clear and intentional and we get our teams invested versus, hey, we've got a whole bunch of new fun projects for you guys. We have a problem. We need to have a meeting. Let's get this knocked out. Can feel very overwhelming to teams. So a discipline process for managing priorities is really just a process for managing change, growth, and development in a way that you and teams can like build a consistent process around, so it doesn't feel uncertain or overwhelming. You might remember these are the core things, right? The 3-year vision, the 1-page plan, and the landscape review. Is where the quarterly review starts. It's good. Remember, most business owners are running constantly on the treadmill, and we get off and we go home and we take a quick break and we come right back and do it again. Really effective founders and leaders have clarity and intention and alignment around their execution. And that means moments of pause. This is why we talk so much about the Friday check-ins in masterminds, the ability to sit with yourself once a week and say, what are the goals? Did we stay on track? Or, right? Are we doing what we need to be doing? Is a constant reminder, right? Align, 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 right? We constantly have to reorient it to the greater goal. So we want to look at our 90-day action plans. And to Natalie's point, we want to evaluate financial practice, marketing, and personal goals relative to performance. That might be for you. That might be for the team. And again, the deep, deep details are in there, but you guys are familiar with the profitability analysis and the benchmark at this point. But these are tools that you can use in addition to other data to check in with yourself on how it's actually going each quarter. To Natalie's point, if you say that you're going to raise your average client rate, going back to the big goal, we're going to raise our average client revenue 47% over the next 3 years, and the next three clients we bring on are below that minimum. We're going to be like, yay, we won, but our spreadsheet's going to be like, actually, you went the wrong direction, right? You grew revenue, but you diluted performance. So these tools give us a little bit of a peek under the hood, if you will. Nat, anything you want to add to that? Because I just realized that was your slide. Sorry. It's like I can't see it with a microphone in my way. You're on mute, by the way.
I think the only thing that I would add is as you get more systematized or sort of as you're leveraging your CRM more, you can build these things into bigger processes, your pipeline reporting, those sorts of things to kind of create automations around it. But if you don't have those yet, these are a really good place to start to say, hey, this is what I want my reporting and metrics to look like. And then as you grow, you have a baseline to work.
Yeah, and don't forget, I don't think we have it on this slide because we haven't updated it for next year, but you have the marketing dashboard now that we did at the last leaders event. And I've yet to see as robust a marketing dashboard. You won't use all of those tabs because you won't do all of those things. But for marketing performance outside of your CRM, that's a good place to track and monitor that data over time. Data is your friend because it tells you if what you think you're doing is actually what you're doing. You know those boxes on the side of the road, the speed boxes where you drive by and it says the speed limit's 20 and it tells you that you're going 24 or 18. You remember those? Do you all not know what the speed limit is? Of course we do. We have a dashboard on our car with a speedometer right there telling us how fast we go. Why do they have those boxes on the side of the road? Because they've done studies that show they reduce speed by 87% of the time. Because it's not something that's in your habit background. Your speedometer on your dashboard's in your habit background. You don't tend to check it all that often. When you drive by one of those boxes, it's giant and you see it and it flashes at you and your brain goes, oh, wait, slow down. Or, ooh, I can speed up. That's what the review is, whether you're just looking at AURM reports, you're doing right a deeper set of reports with your team the way that Tiffany and Jared do. It's the feedback loop. We need an external feedback loop to orient us to the destination, right? If we're 1 or 2 degrees off, over a little bit of time, no big deal. Over a year or 2 years or 3 years, as we've all experienced, right? We can get really off course and have to go back and do more work. So again, we're not going to go through every section in the workbook, but that first section is really about getting your grounding. It's awareness and consciousness. What has happened? What is happening? What should we be aware of? What are our top three practice goals? What are our top three professional goals? And what are our top three personal goals? This is a great exercise to do with teams if you want to get feedback. If they all share practice goals, you know you're really aligned. If they have random things, right, you're going to have to set priorities and create alignment around them. So this will help you go through your Q1 priorities. And the thing I think that's important here, where's that section, Natalie? It's 30, 60, 90 days.
Next, yeah.
Yeah, so as we talked about, like here are the key sections. Natalie will walk you through these a little bit. And then I want to talk a little bit about how we can use this with your teams.
Yeah, so setting up goals, right, getting clear on the metrics and KPIs and how you want to perform for the year and then keeping track of those on a quarterly basis. But I think the most important part is getting focused, right, particularly as we grow, there's lots of new shiny objects that come in. There's a lot of business issues that come up along the way, but like, what are the top goals that are going to move the needle and get us really where we want to go if we go back to that vision planning? So both from a practice, a professional, and personal goals. And I think, Steph, you hit on this, which we talked about, is particularly as you begin to grow and delegate more, separating out your professional development goals as a leader, right? Where do I need to improve to be a better leader for my organization is different than how I be a better manager, is different than where do I spend my time in the business. So I see as firms grow, really focusing on leadership development becomes a key process there. But ultimately, like drilling it down, what are the top three things that I want to do? And then each quarter, breaking those down into priorities, and being really detailed about this. There's a lot of research in neuroscience says that if we're really clear on what our goals are and we write that down, what do we need to do? Why is it important? What does success look like? What are the things that we're going to be facing as we run into working these things? How do we prepare for them? Right? That's actually setting us up for success. If we say, here's the goal, and here are the actions that we're going to need to take there, right? Those key steps and milestones that you see here, that's going to increase your likelihood of success exponentially, right? Because you're actually training your brain to say, okay, I know what's next. Well, here's what we're going to do. And I think also, right, roadblocks and challenges is that planning in advance. So if we say, hey, capacity might be a challenge for the team, then you can sit down and say, how do we address that? And it might be, hey, we need to outsource a function of this to someone else, or we need to bring in another team member to support it. So really sitting down and mapping out and putting pen to paper on what's the goal, but what are the things that I need to do to accomplish that goal?
Yeah, and I think to Natalie's point, these questions, which seem trivial and insignificant, are actually some of the most powerful parts of the process. If you ask your brain what resistance is going to come up against me, and then you're like, okay, I get that, your brain will feel more empowered to address it versus getting 17 days in and then being like, oh, I kind of knew that was coming, but I didn't speak it, if you will. So it's a very thoughtful exercise. This does not need to take 12 days. You can literally do this in an hour or two, if you're focused and not distracted. The trick is when we get to these goal sections, this is where the team can be really valuable, right? You can do a draft and/or your key stakeholders can. But when we get together and we say, okay, what's it going to take to execute on this priority? Now we can be like, okay, what are the key steps or milestones? Hey, we're going to have to run the client list. We're going to need to do the fee analysis, right? Think about what you did with the client transition list, right? Breaking it down, breaking it down, breaking it down. Where that gets really helpful, these are all great conversations to have with the team once you've gotten to that point. The part I really like about this, because it really does turn those big Charlie Brown, want, want, ambiguous goals into bright, bite-sized things we can accomplish, is if these are the priorities or goals for the quarter, what should we have done in the first 30 days? What do we need to have done in the next 60 days? What, so it just really helps you and your team go, okay, if we're going to do, right, we're going to right size the client base. Right, in the first 30 days, we're going to run the analysis. We're going to run the fee report. We're going to calculate X, Y, or Z. Right, in the next, we're going to make decisions about clients and fees. Next 30 days, we're going to build the model, draft the scripts. Right, get the meetings all set, like get everything built out. Hey, next 90 days, we're going to launch it to right tranche one and practice that conversation on 10 clients. Right now, we can really go, how do we take this kind of idea and chunk it into a 90-day plan? And hopefully what you see is now we can do that with the team. Hey team, what are the key milestones that we're going to need to accomplish? What's the 30-day, 60-day, and 90-day? Then they get involved, which helps them to get invested. Again, if it's two or three people, it works just as effectively if it's 20 or 30, right? It's a lot more efficient with three people than it is with 30. You don't necessarily need a full 3-day retreat. But the idea is to go through this for each of the goal sets so that you are really clear of what your roadmap is for the quarter. If you have this roadmap and you've got time blocked in your calendar, you should make consistent and considerable progress because consistency compounds. So the more we can teach the team, hey, this is how we evoke change in this firm, right? We look every quarter, we look at the goals, we make sure we're on track, we set the plan for the next quarter. We roadmap it over 90 days with key milestones and accountability. We get together once a week, every other week, once a month. You're going to pick your meeting cadence. now you're in a really good position to take the team with you. Hey, we're on track. Hey, we're not. In larger firms, Liz, where you have more people, you might have, right, a manager or someone leading, but you might have different people. Tiff and Jared, we did this a lot. We had committees because we just needed to get people involved and we needed to get stuff done. So really, I've talked with a number of you about this, but we can certainly focus on it if anyone wants additional conversation. Is there's a whole process where you shift into the driver's seat or the sidecar, and you teach your team how to sit there with their hands on the wheel and their foot on the gas in a way that you feel really good about. And again, it doesn't mean that they're taking your job as CEO. It means that we have a reliable process for affecting and managing change inside the firm. And that really helps to reduce the overwhelm and that things are always changing, because there's a really reliable, consistent process. We do this every quarter. We sit down, we pick priorities, we roadmap them, right? We get together once a month. And then there are ways, Liz, you and I have talked about this a bit, right? Or even John with assistance, you can say to your team, here's, let's have a meeting. I'm going to drop a bunch of, I call it idea storming. I'm going to drop a bunch of stuff on you. We're going to record it. You're going to take that. You're going to put a draft together, or you're going to run the first, right? Bring that back to me next week. We'll look at your progress, right? Next set of instructions. So rather than doing a lot of the work wherever possible, these are wonderful opportunities to empower your managers, your G2, right? And or members of your team to really start to, right, drive the car for you. But you're right there, right, providing the side seat or back seat, as my husband would say, right? Your back seat driving, you're just teaching them how to use the process so that you're not always the one, right, pushing progress on the firm, if that makes sense. And I know for a lot of us, that's the shift we get really excited about.
Yeah, I think it's a good point to talk about managing the process versus being the visionary and leader who decides the priorities. One of the first things that's great to delegate it to your G2 or to your business ops person is managing the process, doing the nitty-gritty work of it, so that you can kind of elevate yourself up and out and focus on accountability and executing, as opposed to being the person who schedules the meetings and sets up the things and sends out the forms.
So once you've got that plan, you really can hand it off to someone, right? And Alan, Liz, your ops manager, and say, hey, I need you to run with this. And then our job is to lead them through executing on the process so that ultimately, here's the really cool part, someone else leads the process and you show up as the visionary, right? So Neil, 2 or 3 years from now, you should literally, right? The firm should have this really great process. You and Alan as leadership sit down and talk about it, but conceivably, someone else could run and manage the process and you show up as the visionary and say, hey, here's my input, right? And then that person takes it and runs with it. And as you get managers or COOs or directors of operations, those are the kinds of things that they should be doing. We've done this a lot with Michael and his, he uses something very similar to launch, right? The EOS traction process. And over 4 or 5 years now, right, that person's gone from his EA to literally, right, chief of staff, and ultimately, right, into a full-on like director role, right, running the firm, running the meetings. And that's really pulled his time so that he's able to mentor and grow. We joke that he hates managing, but he likes mentoring. And I think we're all kind of like that. Managing is like, you have to deal with the problems and why didn't it go this way and I got to fix it. Mentoring is, let me give you guidance and input and feedback that's going to help elevate, right, your career and your contribution. And generally, we get a benefit from that. When we don't get a benefit from it, when we feel like it's not working, then we don't like to mentor, because then we have to go into manager mode. So the more that we create ownership at the team level, even again, in a small firm, it might be 3 people, but everyone will have responsibilities related to the plan each quarter. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean we hit 100% every time. Most firms don't, by the way. If you have a really good discipline process, 70% is the average in terms of goal achievement. So the idea is really to just put some structure. We joke here that it could be a post-it, right, with 3 things you want to do this year. And if you sat down with your team and that post-it and said, what 3 things is it this quarter? And everybody got on board and you said, how are we going to do it? And you talked about it consistently, it would actually work quite well. So the challenge as firms get bigger is we ultimately build a lot of bureaucracy in, because firms get bigger and we don't have the level of autonomy and ownership. Now, we're all a long way from being so big that that becomes an issue, right? Tiff and Jared have really dealt with that the last few years. And this was one of the things that we started. They had gone through so much change that we really sat down and said, hey, we have to be responsible for how we change and the pace of change and managing change. You guys have to be responsible for getting on board and getting with the change. And right, really nice leadership conversations around that, as they always have. And over a few years, their managers are now actually managing versus bringing them all the problems to fix, right? So the team is involved and invested and engaged. And it's just become part of the culture. We have these meetings every year. We have these meetings. It's literally just a part of the doctrine of how they operate. So the most important part, as we talk about all the time, is just do something, right? The one-page plan, a quarterly meeting with the team. If you're ready for a more robust process, let us know. Natalie's here. Natalie will be working with our leaders. If you guys recall, we changed the leader structures next year. So you get calls with me and practice and or mindset coach. So if you want to dive into deep and be like, let's get the team, we're going to build out a process or a comp plan or whatever, we can do that again. So, but the idea is to start something, because once you start, you lay the track. And once you lay the track and you push the train back and forth across it, right, the track will get better and smoother. It's the consistency piece. So I think whatever the process is, it's creating a consistent and disciplined process for change. You're going to sharpen the saw. You don't have to spend 2 days every single quarter. You do need to have consistent time annually, quarterly, monthly. Ideally, this is the next level up from a leadership perspective. You really want to elevate your leaders. Here's the challenge. Meet with yourself once a week. So I was sharing with a group this morning that I have a client, he goes to McDonald's every Monday morning. Now, I'm not saying it should be McDonald's. I was like, really, of all your healthful options? But he's like, it's my one thing. And I get my coffee and my Egg McMuffin. I go there at the exact same time before I hit the office. So it's just me and my notepad. So thank you guys. Remember Jed's Limitless Life book from the beginning of the year? If you don't have one of those, I would really encourage you. Allison can find one, and maybe we can put that in the leader's inbox. Actually, let's make sure we talk about then the vision call, because we're going to do that really cool vision call. And that's a perfect way. It's a perfect place to insert it. So the goal is to make sure that we have a process and we're honing it over time. We think we don't have time. Abe Lincoln, this is one of my great Abe Lincoln quotes. He said, if I had 5 minutes to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first three sharpening my axe. We just don't do it as leaders. We just get so busy being in the business that it's really hard to elevate. And he said, look, no one's going to bother me at McDonald's. There's no email. There's no one walking in my office. It's between my home and where I'm going. It's an hour where I just sit down and I check in. And it is a powerful discipline. Again, personally or professionally, all the science, all the research, all the studies show, if you check in, if you have a goal, your odds of achieving it are about 40%. If you check in with yourself on a regular basis, they go into the 60s. If you're in a group that has consistent check-ins, AKA leaders, et cetera, your odds go up to between 80 and 90% of actually achieving those goals and affecting that change. Coaching and community really help. Focus on the essential few. We're not going to over preach on this one. You guys get it by now. Every time you've tried to do five big things, you might have gotten half of one of them done. We pick one big priority a quarter, that tends to get done. And if we can fill in around it, then fantastic. But it's the right, our appetites are bigger than our eyes are bigger than our stomach problem. And consistency, which we've talked a lot about. So I really, today, what we want to do is just kind of level set around that and then talk with you about your processes, what's working, where you feel like there are gaps or opportunities. And then we, Natalie, I, and your peers will spend the next, I think we're right on time, 45 minutes or so, just helping really unpack that and work through it so we can really dive into this topic and engage and collaborate. Natalie, do you just want to kick us off with some rip off and deploy?
Yeah, for me, it's getting really, this is about building a process around strategic planning. So every quarter, what's the agenda? How do you engage the team? Who's involved and who isn't? That's going to change as you grow, right? If you're a lifestyle practice with a small team, everyone's involved. And right now I'm working with a firm and we're pulling people out of the process and only bringing in the key leaders in the organization, and they're kind of disseminating down. So when you think about that, as you grow, your processes change. That's a piece that you need to look at. How do you need to prepare for it? I think Stephanie's point is great. You know, where do you need to spend time preparing? I had a leader ask me recently, like, well, I sit in the meeting with the team and I do all the vision planning with them. And again, I think that can work great, but his team sits there and goes, okay, like, where do you want to take this thing? And so my recommendation was, you need time before your strategic planning process to yourself to figure out, where do I want to go? What does this business need, right? I'm the captain of the ship. I need to figure out which island or which country we're moving to next. And then you do the planning and the process and the agenda building and the sharing those things out with the team. So really just getting that systematized and pretty disciplined. And at its best practice level, this is a workflow in your business that has someone else running that. I do that for some of the clients that I work with. It's right. They're not the ones driving the execution.
Well, I think a point that Natalie made there, and I think it's a good way to kind of roll into conversation is, you know, how do you curate a change management system? We call that business and performance, right? Business planning and performance management, but it's really right. A performance and progress system, right? Like miles on the car, right? Are we moving from California to New York in the way that we want? So we'd love to just break out here a little bit and talk about what systems you each have, what's working, like what's worked in your firm to create more clarity, alignment, investment, ownership, accountability. And then as you reflect on what your growth system, right? Whether you're have one or going to grow into one, what might, you know, John, what does that look like for you currently? And, you know, as you think about implementing this, what would it look like? What challenges do you think you might face? What are the milestones you need to cover, right, to put it in practice? So we'll start there. Anybody want to kick off? Just go wild, random, left to right. Neil, you're the first advisor on my screen as I go from left to right. Can you share with the group what you are doing as a firm now? Any changes you've made that have been helpful? And as you think about this or the process you have, any gaps or outcomes that you'd like to solve for? Get help from the group.
Yeah, and I'll make it quick because I got to leave real quick for the dog here shortly. We have followed that launch process and kind of blended it a little bit with EOS, not much. So we definitely do like weekly action reviews with the team, daily huddles. We just started doing quarterly business reviews this year. I think our next one is scheduled for mid-December before we all go on break together, just so we kick the 2024 off on a good foot. So we've gotten those in place and we followed the workbook and a few other things. So we're doing it in a light capacity, not a very deep, because there's only four or five of us. And I think where I've written down most of my notes for today, where I need to focus on is I need to be doing a much better job of checking in with myself on an ongoing basis, whether that's monthly or weekly, as well as making sure that the blocks that I put on my calendar for those revenue producing activities or that CEO time, I make sure that I actually stick to that and not let other things get scheduled on top of it.
Yeah, that's great. Great point. What any changes as you've implemented the QBRs, how has that been helpful? Have you noticed, again, because you don't have to do right a 2-day process each quarter, but if you found that helps create clarity or alignment, or like what are the, as you reflect on it, how has it been helpful to you?
It's been helpful to us because it allows us to get a deeper dive into like our 90-day rocks. Essentially, what have we done for the last quarter? What are we going to do for the next quarter? And how do those both team and individual projects kind of layer on top of each other? So it just keeps pushing us towards the goal that we need. So we touch on that very, very briefly when we do our weekly action review as a team. But having that quarterly business review allows us to dive much deeper into it.
Yeah. So it might just be a function of, right, team check-ins between the quarters, right? It doesn't have to be every week. Maybe it's a once a month. Right, just a progress check-in when we know that something's coming up, right? If we tell a client we'll get that to you and we don't have any deadline, that tends to be the thing we push. If the client's coming in on Thursday, right, if nothing else by Thursday morning, I really need to get to this. So sometimes those check-ins can just help the team maintain their awareness of where they are progressing versus waiting 90 days if that helps maintain momentum at all.
Yeah. And the other thing that we've done too is we still do the financial component inside the QBR, but mm-hmm. after doing it for a couple of quarters, we realized we wanted more frequency with the financials.
Yep.
So Alan and I break out the financials just for a 15-minute conversation once a month. Great. Just so we're following the pulse a little bit faster.
Yeah. I like, particularly on your own, because you need that accountability. But if you have a partner or a G2 or a manager level person, a once a month meeting is a really good idea. Not, you know, like every action item with the team, but to those performance metrics we talked about, right? Is our client numbers, our marketing numbers, and our practice numbers where we want them to be, so that you can write real time adjust. If you said you were going to increase that average revenue per client and you realize it's gone down because you made an exception, you may still make that choice, but now you're more aware of it, right? So you have less runway, right, to stall along, I guess is a good way to put it. So I'm a big fan of whether with yourself or a partner or another leader, a monthly check-in on those numbers, because your financial and your marketing numbers are important. Like 90 days in marketing could be a tweak that you made to your website 45 days in and got you another client. Mm-hmm. So I like to look at financial and marketing data monthly if you can.
Okay.
That's a good point. Love that. Yeah.
And also I think it's a good place to bring up issues, right? That maybe more of a leadership level that you don't want to talk about the team with, but having the like, what's stopping us? How do we solve for that? Neil, what do you think is having you resist that time as CEO? I think that's really something to look at as you think about kind of that personal accountability, is sort of what's the thing that's stopping me from spending time in that space?
It's a good point. Yeah. So, and that's just getting our next advisor up and running and still spending more time inside the client service role instead of just being more CEO, visionary, and growth focused.
Well, you could also note that, right, a Q4 priority is going to be training and mentoring junior advisor. Mm-hmm. And that might be what you do with some of that Monday time, right? It's not a distraction if it's in fact the priority. So that's where we tend to take on projects like getting our CFP, hiring an advisor. We were on with an advisor this morning. He's in the middle of an RAA transition. He's like, what do you think my priorities are? I was like, well, this quarter, your only priority is RA transition. And until that's done, it's your priority every quarter. And he was like, I can do that. I was like, yeah, you really can't do that. Like the business has needs. So when things come up, we've had people like, you know, they get sick, right? Or you need more time off. That priority that quarter is running the shop on, right, a limited staff or capacity, right? So we just don't tend to decide we want to do things, but I think to Natalie's point, we don't always align time, energy, resources, and capital, like truly align them with what we need to do. And I think the weekly meetings are great, and if you and Alan can just continue to check in monthly, you're right. It just creates a lot more awareness, which in turn creates a lot more accountability. So I love that you're doing that. But yeah, to Natalie's point, like make sure that time is priority time, even if that priority, right, it happens to be training someone. Awesome. Thank you for that. Appreciate the feedback. John, how about you? What kind of system do you have in place? Any wins and challenges you want to bring to the group?
making a lot of progress on my practice benchmark. It's been an interesting journey getting that thing figured out, but I'm pretty much there with it. And I have my daily huddle with my team. So every morning at 9:30, we have a daily huddle. Every Monday, we have our weekly team meeting. My staff has been drastically reduced to just Leslie. So everyone's kind of doing their own thing now, which has been great. It's given me a lot of capacity to clean things up. I'm glad I found that, you know, came across that QBR again, because I'm doing planning for next year, and I like the layout, and I don't think I've ever come across it on there before, even though I know I've done that module before. Yeah. But everything for me is just taking my numbers and really trying to understand them. So I went through my QuickBooks and broke down my QuickBooks into an Excel visual that makes sense to me, so that as I'm entering things into the spreadsheet for Limitless, I have a pretty good idea of what I want to enter, why it makes sense. And I think that last year I really didn't put a importance to that at all, and it kind of just got away from me. And the new version of myself is like, I can't imagine scaling a company growing at any capacity, whether it's marketing or adding team members, without being that dialed into my financials. And it's a learning curve. It's like you can do the modules and all that, but until you actually go through your QuickBooks and like make a commitment to understand what it all means, you just don't know what you don't know, and you won't appreciate what you're going to pick up by just going into the trenches and like really digging down into it.
Yeah,
And so that's been the biggest.
I think you've taken a really great step in what I think most business owners don't recognize is that the way we structure our P&Ls is not actually a really great way to look at the numbers and the data for how we run our business. And so what I call normalizing the P&L to the business model is right in advisory firms, where are we spending on direct expenses, advisor compensation, right? Those revenue producing activities. And how are we breaking down our operating expenses and our team costs and turning those things into something that actually helps you with planning? Do we have room for another advisor? Do we want to, decrease profit margin by 5% to create and plan ahead for capacity? It's time to hire that next person. So I think that's a really critical step, John. And yeah, it definitely takes some learning and adjusting because I think people have tendency to measure to these, industry benchmarks. And it's a great framework. And yet, your business is going to be very different than the typical industry benchmark based on your services, your ideal client, how you've structured your team. So, if you haven't yet, the next step is looking at how do I set goals to the new numbers that I've created that I'm understanding?
Yeah, and John, you've gone through a lot. What I call shifting from, right, we tend to look at financials in the rear view. Oh, look, that's what happened. And now I think, and I would love for you to share a little bit about that with the group and how it's helped you, right? You're much more forecasting now. You're using that data to decide what is and isn't okay, what needs to change, and what you will or need to do in the future. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, it's 100% fair. The part that no one can help you out with is actually going through it. Like you have to go through it enough until you can put it into, it's like a puzzle, right? You got to build it into a module that works for you. Like I can look at what I created now and have a pretty good idea of what happened so far year to date, what happened for the quarter, what's going on for the month, and what's going to happen for the rest of the year. But it took like, I don't know, Liz knows, I mean, it took hours and days, and like, I mean, I've been on this conversation now for months since July, right? And been like a madman. And so once you get there, it's really awesome because then you'll have something that actually makes sense to you. And what I'm learning is that QuickBooks is one thing, and you're going to have someone who are going to do your books the way they think that your books should be done, because you're not giving them the input that they require from you. It's not like they don't want to do them that way for you. You just haven't given them any guidance, so they're doing it the way they think you want it. When in reality, when you start looking into it, you're like, I don't want that there. So I'm not gonna go back and kind of redo what has already been done. That's like spilled milk, right? I was looking at 2022 and I was like, oh my God, what in the world happened? Like 2022 is like, I can't believe I did my taxes with that mess. Right. But for 2024, tomorrow, we're going to have a pretty in-depth conversation on what I want her to do moving into 2024 and what she needs to do to prep for 2024. Here we are in November. She's got a little bit of time to make sure she gets things cleaned up for the new way we're going to work things. I will never make a decision again without putting it into my dashboard about anything. About I didn't make a decision with Limitless last time you and I talked, because I'm like, I got to get my dashboard figured out and make sure that my metrics are correct. Good news is they are. But yeah, it's super, super, super important. And for those of you who this is resonating with, you may reach out in 6 months and be like, wow, I get what you mean now.
Well, yeah, you get like you're, I think the conversation, like you feel armed with information and you use that information to, right, govern yourself in the business, which is very different than waking up and freestyling it. Like, oh, and then we look in the rearview mirror and we go, oh, those were the results. And we tend to, this, I think, is where John has really done a great job. Liz, I know you've done a lot of work. Melissa is on the line today. She's done a ton of work here across her teams and offices over the last year because she was in a very similar position. As we look at the result in the aggregate and we go good or bad or somewhere in between, but it's an aggregate, which means it's really hard to peel back the layers, unpack it, and be like, now John and I were having a conversation where it was like, all right, what do we need to account for? This much went here, this much went there. How much do we want that to be? How much do we need to grow to get ready for that next advisor? If like now we're having a really informed business conversation based on right sound understanding of the financials and the impact of those decisions, which that makes it a lot easier, right? We always joke that you can't manage what you can't measure. So we try not to look at financials as an aggregate rearview dashboard as much as, right, a present day tool that, right, tells us where we are on course and is really forecasting our financial success in the future so that we can proactively pivot and change plans or adjust based on, to Natalie's point, we know when we're going to have client capacity issues. We know when we're going to have advisor issues or team constraints. Like we can predict that with really great reliability if we've got that data. So, John, great job. Really appreciate the shares just around how that's really kind of shifted the way you look at the business and make decisions. That's the discipline shift that we talk about. It's really important.
Thank you.
Liz, how about you? Where are you with planning and performance management, and what kind of what are wins and challenges?
So we have our strategic planning meeting. We do an annual cadence of that coming up next week in the week or this week and next week. So smaller group this week. And then the whole team next week. The piece that I am taking from our conversation today is I'm always like, I always hear that conversation about buy-in, getting team buy-in. And I have defaulted to that's the brainstorming place where I like to live. And it sounds like that doesn't need to happen. So Clinton and I were having a conversation this morning about how he wants to remove brainstorming from the strategic planning day with the whole team. And then we're talking about this week's meeting. And I was like, well, brainstorming has to happen sometime. Like, gotta get that some. And I'm just realizing now, like, brainstorming happens with me. And then I am bringing it and putting in some of the key pieces that I'm taking away. It just feels so directive for me in a place where I need to continue to feel that comfort of hierarchy and the fact that employees are desiring that. So those are the key pieces.
What would that look like when you think about putting that shift in place? What do you think that would look like? What would you do different?
Which shift? Brainstorming on my own?
Yeah. Like it is the idea to bring it as we talked about, right? I think you had just joined or it was right before. Especially in a larger firm, you may not sit there and open yourself up to what does anyone think about anything on any given day, because then you got to spend a little energy. Well, and again, it depends on your culture and your people. If half the people are like kind of okay and half are on board, if you've got three people and everyone's on board, it's going to be a different kind of conversation. And so that's where it is okay to have what we call a democratic dictatorship. And what I mean by that is you can see the ideas, which is, hey, Clinton and I sat down, we brainstorm. Right, we reflected on the vision of the firm. It remains the same, or here's the updated version. Would love to get feedback. Does this like now we're just in feedback land? It's not, hey, go craft a brand new vision. It's actually that's great. What about, being a best place to work or something? Oh, okay. Well, like we'll reflect. You don't have to say yes or no in the meeting. You can say that's great feedback. We'll reflect on it. You can say, what is it? Right. So you can decide in the moment. But I think one of the things we sometimes worry about is, right, that we have to say yes to all their feedback or include all their feedback, and we want people to feel involved. But it's also okay to say, hey, really appreciate that. Let's have a conversation about what it would take, right? And then you can do a quick brainstorm there, or you can say, hey, that's something Clinton and I really need to think about. what will be required to execute, let us put that on the list and we'll come back and bring that to the group or bring that to you for feedback when we get closer. So a lot of times, especially with teams where you're kind of seeding the agenda, it's here's the vision, here are the goals, here's our leadership meeting, here's what we framed out, draw that on a slide or a whiteboard. What do you guys think? Right. So you can take 15 or 20 minutes. It doesn't have to be 3 hours to say, because what we want them to do is have a chance to look at it. Here's the really important part, and not reject it silently or otherwise. Because if they say, hey, yeah, those make sense, don't have anything else, that is implied consent, right? And that over time becomes investment. The more involved they are in the process, the more invested they become. So that's where you can look at what are anchors, right? Here are things we want to share with and open up to feedback is very different than a brainstorming session to say, what do you all think the top priorities are? And you can do things at scale where you get feedback in a contained environment. You can do surveys, right? Hey, everyone, what do you think the top three wins were for the year? The top three, things we need to solve for in your department across the firm. And if you see a lot of consistent feedback, you're like, oh, this is probably going to come up. If you see a lot of random feedback, you can consolidate that and then bring it to the group and say, hey, we asked you guys what you thought. Here's what you came up with. Let's spend 30 minutes brainstorming around this. So I think you can lay the track really confidently that you're framing out the vision and the goals and probably pretty directionally priorities, but then open that back up to feedback. So the team has an opportunity to think about what will it take? What are the key milestones? Where are we capacity wise, right? What are the challenges we would face? That's the conversation that helps evoke investment. Even if they're like, we hate it, it's awful, it's not going to work. And then at least you know what their initial response to it is. And you can say, okay, that's fair feedback. Let's continue the discussion. And right when we're done, Clinton and I will review all of this and come back to you guys with a plan or have some follow-up meetings to get a little bit more clarity around things. So I think you can feel okay being directive, open it up to a democratic conversation, but it's still a dictatorship said with great love because you ultimately do have to make the decision.
Yeah.
You're the leader. Two things that I do tactically here to help in this process as a function of team professional development or even separately before I do the brainstorming and leadership work, I send out a survey to the team or I talk in their one-on-ones, like what's working, what's not working, what do you think could be improved in your role? Do you have any ideas for the business? So we're soliciting feedback before leadership meets so that you can kind of aggregate that and then put it into buckets. It also helps you in another way, which is if something's not big enough or important enough for the firm as a whole to take on a strategic initiative, people then can take individual ownerships over those things. So we had a team member in a meeting. She came, she said, I think that we should change our birthday process. Like we have multiple advisors now and only one person signs the birthday cards. And that seemed weird in an ensemble. It's a team structure. And we were like, that's great. We love that idea. It's not a team. This is not a big thing. Do you want to take ownership over that? And she was like, oh, yeah, I would totally do that. So it became a goal for them to take ownership over. We had another team member who wanted to create a getting to know you process for the whole team and kind of be the cultural leader in the organization. Another example of, great, go run with that. But no, it's not like this big strategic initiative. So getting feedback before you meet. And then I literally separate out a leadership meeting and a team meeting. And the structure of those meetings is exactly what Steph said. One is for where are we going? What are we doing? We're the captains. The other is, hey, what do you guys think? What are the roadblocks? What's that piece? And then after that meeting, you do say, hey, we're going to take all the feedback and give you the finalized plan. Mm-hmm. And who is going to own what in that plan or what working groups are going to own which piece of it. And it's simply you get bigger and bigger and you can't involve everyone in the process unless you're using a very different model. And you have to have really people who really want a lot of ownership. And I find as you grow, staff don't always want a whole lot of ownership. Your client service person doesn't necessarily want to do big strategic projects. They're like, I just would like to do my job. That would be great.
Yeah. It reminded me that the other piece, one of my I was talking to Clinton about a potential KPI that we have next year is meetings kept. Because notoriously this year we have set up meeting cadences and then canned them when someone was like, oh, this isn't working, or people weren't showing up or whatever. So it that continual place for feedback, but intentionally creating some time during our strategic plan to address that and say, like, what constructs the good meeting? And I think that was coming out of a call with Stephanie as like a follow-up item, or maybe it's my mastermind. I can't quite remember. Somewhere here. But yeah.
Well, and then it goes to, okay, team, what will it take to, right, improve meeting consistency? Where are the, like, hey, let's, this is where brains, like, what are the reasons, right? What are the top five reasons that this keeps happening? Boom, boom. Okay, what can we fix? What can we, now you notice just through the conversation, it's okay, can we fix that process? And that's where I think you can take, right, 30, 45 minutes, depending on the topic, and say, okay, we're going to share the vision. Here are the practical issues or practice issues we want to talk through. Right. And you can have an open session for, hey, did we miss anything? But for the most part, you're not going to get nine people jumping up and going, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You forgot about all of these things. And to Natalie's point, the follow-up is very valuable. So it's good to have a team meeting on the back end and then say, hey, here's what we came up with. You guys have any feedback? Great. We'll meet with you. And then to Natalie's point around performance development, the next step of that process as the firm gets larger, when you're smaller, this doesn't exist. But as you get larger, it becomes how do those goals that we set and priorities we have for the firm for the year translate into department goals and individual goals? So if our goal is to grow revenue and you're the head of operations, right, where can you affect change there? Where can you not? To your point, or maybe we can create operational gains, right, which drive productivity, which frees up capacity for revenue. So we try to take the firm goals, look at groups when you have larger groups or practice areas, if it's just, right, you've got marketing, operation, staffing, even in a small firm. And then how does the plan affect each of those areas and how can we track progress against those as well? And then that ultimately informs what everyone's goals are next year. Like, hey, Natalie, in order to advance my career and we have this priority, this would be a great course for me to take, or I could build out this process. Or so that's where you can start to connect the dots between the goals to the groups to the individuals. Like the managers should sit them down with their team and say, hey, these are the department goals or the firm goals. What are the things we can do to affect change here? What are our department priorities, right? Because you're not necessarily going to do that in the big group meeting. And that's where Liz, Tiff, and Jared did a bunch of committees because, right, we don't have a bunch of people just sitting around with free time, but everybody had a little bit of time to focus on areas, and that really helped people get involved and invested, right? And then they kind of shepherded it through the process to our conversation to kind of get the outcome they needed to make sure that they got while still allowing people to kind of participate in the process. Because again, sometimes we have to just be like, yeah, that's not going to work. We're going to need to do it this way. But I love that you're putting that process in place. How often are you reviewing? Are you and Clinton sitting down and reviewing priorities and numbers quarterly, or are you putting that in place as you look at next year?
It's been sporadic this year. We've been trying to go for monthly. One note that we made was during our review season, our meeting was at an awkward time that we wanted to get client meetings in, and so we had removed it entirely from the schedule, and then that created several breakdowns. So we're now meeting every Monday.
Okay, great. You find that helpful?
Today it was great.
Awesome.
First
Awesome. Anything you need, want to solve for, or account for? Or are you feeling pretty good so far? Awesome. Love it. Good to hear it. Leanna, cute puppy.
Oh.
Puppy time. It's doggy day here at Limitless. All right, Leanna. Travis, you and Leanna, how are you guys applying? Or not, again, no pressure, business planning and anything you want to share with or get support from the group on.
Yeah,
So
we do annual business planning. We had our fiscal year-end meeting in September because our fiscal calendar is just weird. I'd say me and Leanna probably over the coming weeks into December will, kind of start looking at next year. I mean, our big thing, is obviously going to be the transition to our own RIA. So that's, I mean, going to be kind of an all consuming, business planning objective. This year it played a still a large part, but there are still kind of other things that we were trying to push the ball ahead on. Historically, we haven't done QBRs. That is something, once we're in this new state and we have full control, full grasp over all those business levers, that's something that I see important. And really, I'd say, big, I want to get a better handle on KPIs, and stuff like that. Obviously, some of the things will be more relevant in the future state as far as some of the tools that we're using or have historically used. I'd say we've been doing EOS Lite. We do use a software solution to coordinate all of that for us. That's the tool that we kind of launch our meetings in. I like it just because it's one spot for us to kind of keep track of, all of those elements,
Is
whether
that
we're talking
Travis?
about
Is
them or
that
not.
through, is that the EOS software or something different?
Yeah,
The
so
Lumi?
we were using the EOS software from like the ones that created EOS probably 5 years ago. Then we found an alternative called 90, like the number. And I actually liked that more. I found it was a better tool than what we were using. I haven't checked out the EOS company's like new revamped tool. But I mean, for us, we're a team of three, and the pricing, in all honesty, the pricing that we were able to get for 90 was like way less expensive than what we were paying the original tool that we found. So that was probably the primary reason.
How are you liking that tool?
Love it. I mean, we've used it for 3 years. We were using the other tool for probably about two. Really like it. I think, it saves me the hassle of having to create spreadsheets and all of this kind of stuff. And I think we pay like, I think it's under $30 a month. I think it's something like $15 a month for three seats.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we'll check it out. I haven't heard of that one, but we're always looking for it, right? Anything that can create a system and maintain the system for you is a good thing to invest in. So we'll definitely
Yeah,
check
I'd
it out.
highly recommend looking at it.
Awesome. 90s, is it like 90.com? Like 90?
90.io, I think. I'll shoot you an email with
Yeah,
the
cool.
link. I
That's
honestly
great.
just can't remember off the top of my head.
No, it's fine. I'm sure we can find it if we have to. And if
Yeah.
you're also using a project management software like Asana, I don't know if any of you are using those. We use those for our business planning, which is
Yeah,
awesome.
so
But
I am
it can
wanting
get
to get
complicated.
yeah, I am wanting to get in the new state, I am wanting to get the team more engaged in Asana. I myself am still having to kind of get my head wrapped around it. And I know there's a lot of more knowledgeable experts out there that can kind of set up various things in Asana. So yeah, before I kind of roll that out to anyone on the team, I kind of got to get my understanding a little increased.
Yeah, it's always a challenge. You've got your CRM in the task and other tools, right? So that's about kind of consolidating and focusing and do what works, right? So don't necessarily abandon a tech that's working really well for you and, in trade for another one unless there's a really, really good reason for it.
Travis is also working on Hubly and getting things situated in Hubly for our new space going forward as well. So he has a lot on his plate.
I like Hubly. They've got one of the only tools that has actual reporting in it now, and they're building that out a lot. So compared to the CRMs, I think that's a really great benefit of using that tool.
Yeah, it's integrated, which is awesome. Well, good. Leanna, anything you want to add around the business planning process?
Just that we are full year ahead now. Travis is back to work officially this week, so He's got a lot on his plate, so he's going to start cracking the whip for Alexis and I. We're doing a lot trying to get our kind of records up to date, make sure they're accurate, so that when we start building out some of the other things for our transition, we've got good data for that. So.
Yeah. It is. It's one of those things you go so long without it. And then when you start talking about it and hearing about it and looking at it, as John has done and Liz has done and Melissa's done, you're all now in the process of really, right now, all of a sudden it's like, wow, I can't really imagine running my business with, if I said to John, I'm going to take your financials back to square one and you're going to run that business, he'd be like, not going to do it. So
yeah.
I know you're in the middle of the messy middle or the beginning of the messy middle as you do transition, but pulling in those technologies, right? Having agency over your data so that you know what you've got will be, I think, a big win for you guys as you make that shift next year. And again, yeah. when you get there, let us know, right? We've got the tools, yep. the spreadsheets, all the stuff, but square one is get yourself in a place where you have control over your data.
Right. I guess my next biggest thing for me is to think about compensation. You know, in this new space, how does the whole compensation structure work? You know, paying our assistants is easy. That's an easy thing. But how do we set things up as far as myself and Travis and the business and, you know, running it as an LLC and all of that stuff? So that would be, I think, something that, you know, starting the last part of this year into the beginning of next year, we're going to want to, you know, get a good handle on that, because we're thinking of transitioning, you know, mid to end of April, beginning of May at some point during that time frame. So help with that.
Well, good. Yeah, we're going to be, I think it's the March retreat, but I have to double check what we're calling growth strategy for staffing. Like, you know, if you lose a person and you replace them, you all know how to do that. But what almost all of you are dealing with in some form is, okay, what's, as I build to this next level of success, what's the staffing and compensation and HR model that's going to support that? And we don't necessarily, right, if we took Liz's org chart and her expenses or yours, Leanna, or Lyle's, and we said, hey, we want to quadruple, we wouldn't want to quadruple time, overhead, staff, expenses, right? We'd want some efficiency gains, right, some optimization along the way. So when we build out growth strategies, obviously we talk about the marketing machine, right? But the people engine, right, is the other very big piece of it. So we're going to really dive into that. You know, what do those staffing models look like as you grow? How do we design compensation plans? What, you know, do you, you know, Liz, if you quadrupled, would you be hiring a manager in there? So would you not, right? And then what does that mean to those metrics? So we don't, if our revenue per advisor is 500,000 now, and our goal is to get it to 750,000, we can't just do more of the same, right? So how are we aligning people, process, and platform? So Leanna, we'll definitely be talking about that, because it's really big on most everybody's radar, right? As we grow, how do we staff? How do we, right, pay? And then how do we advance and reward those folks all the way up to, right, for some of you, partnership and equity, and or buyout plans for a couple of you. Liz, you've already done that part. That's the taking over part is awesome. So yeah, for sure. But good, those would be things we can definitely pay attention to. And again, as you get more of that data, we'll be in a better position to use that data to say, hey, at 3x, this is what the firm could look like, right, versus just 3xing overhead and expenses. Let's talk through that organizational strategy and design, right? What's the staffing model look like? And then once you guys have your growth strategies, right, comp plans, it becomes economics and plan design, which I know seems complicated and cool, but there's a lot of ways you can do it, but it's just aligning math with the results and the outcomes we want to create. So yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. Awesome. Lyle, good sir, how are you today?
Very well. How are you?
Good. As you sort of listen to this conversation, share with the group a little bit about where you are in business planning in general and or for next year. Anything that you've used that's been beneficial and any challenges or anything you want to bring to the group?
So we definitely do our annual business planning. We definitely do sort of a quarterly business review, Drew and I. I would say the one thing that I would want to do more regularly would be weekly and monthly. That stuff kind of happens ad hoc. We do only keep it to Monday mornings, so it can't just fall anywhere. That's the one piece of structure. We had something we had sprung on us our first since we've been independent LPL branch audit thing, which when the first time that shows up, by the way, that's not exactly a comfortable email that you get, and we're going to come do our audit, and it seems scary. And then you talk to the folks in the home office, and they're like, yeah, it's not really a big deal, it'll take 10 minutes. But we kind of had to do a couple of things to prepare for that. So Drew said to me, you know, we really need to spend some time with that. So we did that this morning. So, you know, just from a working on the business perspective, we've been really disciplined about keeping that to Mondays, which is great. But it needs refinement, and it's just not something that we've spent a lot of time on this year because we've spent so much time on other things that we felt were, you know, at that point, way more critical from the perspective of just getting the house in order.
Awesome. Where are you set up? Are you going to start the monthly? You'd mentioned potentially monthly and weekly. Would those be with Drew on Mondays, or is that just a
Yeah,
quick?
there. Yeah, they, no, they would definitely. Those would be Monday mornings. That's our work on the business day. Obviously we do our limitless stuff in the afternoons. Our mastermind stuff happens on Mondays. So that would be consistent as our sort of, you know, admin work on the business day. Calendars are already blocked out for that. Clients can't make appointments and things like that. So that works. But just from a systems perspective and from a discipline perspective, I will say, because the last probably 2, 3 weeks has been a really good, I guess, a really good example of this stuff and what how we know it's not particularly on point yet. We had our Bleakley annual retreat 2 weeks ago. That was amazing. We got a lot of stuff done there that we knew we needed to do around fee raise, like how that was going to work, what it was going to look like, et cetera. Came out of that super excited. We were going to hit the ground running last week with that. And we had kind of carved out some time around because we're in the middle of surges right now. So we'd actually carved time around that. And then in the midst of all that, quite literally, had a one very, very nice opportunity referred to us. And then on the back of that, literally the largest opportunity that I've ever had in my career referred to us. That just took all the attention to a completely different place. And that's great and awful at the same time, because it made me realize that the systems are probably not where they need to be, because it wouldn't have caused us to sidetrack everything else we were doing. And at the same time, really thankful, obviously, for having the opportunity. And I will say, a little bit, I owe a little bit to all of everybody here in this room, and then a whole bunch of limitless people who aren't. My ability to go into that situation from a place where I didn't feel like I would have felt previously like I should not have been having that conversation with that person about a pile of money that big, because that's not who I was. And everybody here, you know, throughout Limitless and all the things that we've worked on, put in place, and created throughout the last, you know, 11 months. Or 10 and a half months is really huge, you know, in the way that I was able to meet that opportunity. So that's, but yeah, we know we still have some work to do around systems, because we backburnered our whole fee raise thing. And that was like, we had absolutely, that was teed up for last week. And
Well,
that was
look, I
probably
mean,
going to get pushed.
you know,
It's going to get
if
pushed
you push
probably to
the
the end of
project
this
out,
year.
yeah, I mean, like, I don't think anyone on this call would be hurt about pushing a project out a week when they got their largest client ever. I mean, let's be honest. Now, I love the, yes, we can build discipline into the process, right? Because we don't have to drop everything. But let's be honest, your largest client ever for everyone on this call is a pretty large client. And that means complicated, and you don't have that super tight, like high-end client system built. Like, so you've just, right, you got to get involved, roll up your sleeves, and make sure things get done. And that happens, and that's totally okay. What I love, what I always want us to do, we do it too. It's intention. There's a complete difference between I meant to do this, and now I'm going to go get distracted by this big client, is very different than, hey, we were going to do the fee raise this week with the circumstances being what they are in order to meet this client opportunity and maintain our sanity. We're going to push that out 2 weeks. Does that feel good? Yes. That's intentionally redeciding, right, to reprioritize. That's being a business owner, right? That happens 17 times a day, 17 times a week, 700 times a year for all of us. Lyle, I don't think you would put it off for 19. So that's where the system will save you, right? Putting it off for a week or two is one thing, but when you're doing your monthly check-in, it's, oh crap, we thought we were going to put it off for a week and it's a month and we still haven't started it. Are we still dealing with this thing and we want to keep it on hold? Or do we want to make it an active priority again, right? It's just the consciously reflecting on where it is active or not active and you clearly deciding, hey, I'm going to put this on hold is great. Your quarterly process, if you put it, that's the beauty of a process. If you put it on hold too long, if nothing else, when you do your next quarterly review, it's like, oh, we like to call that learning. Here's what I did, right? And then quarter over quarter, yeah, you get better and better at it. But congratulations on the progress and certainly on the client opportunity. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Listen, I don't spike the ball until we get in the end zone. So, you know,
well, but it's great that you really feel more conscious and confident about how you're handling it.
Really, awesome. Really happy for the opportunity. Definitely.
That's great.
Yeah. I think that's how you categorize projects or priorities is a really good point that Stephanie's making when we do this, right? If you're going through those meetings and you're looking at, right, is this project on track? What are the issues around it? There is that conversation around other things come up and prioritizing and being intentional. And so deciding like, is it on hold and we still need to do it this quarter? Or like, is it no longer a priority this quarter and it's moving into next quarter? And then when you get to quarterly planning, you get to say, hey, something had to move, right? Do we still have the capacity in resources, right? So you become very focused on that. Interruptions not being disruptive, but actually just being a part of what is an iterative process, right? Because those things are going to change along the way. And so I think as you look at your monthly and your weekly meetings, right, checking in on the status of all the things that you've committed to is a really great way to look at it. Like, where are we? Red, green, yellow, you know, on track, off track. And then like, okay, what are the issues around this? So that conversation becomes, hey, the issue is we have another big priority. We're going to move this out or we're going to outsource it, right? Your resourcing becomes the conversation. How are we resourcing the firm? Not what are we not getting done, right? Yeah. Very different framework.
Yeah. One feels like you're making conscious decisions. The other just feels like you're getting caught on the wheel again. When I was at United, we had 8 or 9 people on the executive team to start and they had no process for tracking priorities or progress. It was really fun. So you know me, I built a spreadsheet and I color coded it, right? Where we had each leader and their priorities, which is a very easy thing to do in Asana or with your team. And then it was, right, what's the priority? What's the status? Green, yellow, red, owner, due date of project and next action. And then the best part, which is the conscious part, is reason for status, right? It's yellow because we, you know, decided to take on a big client opportunity and that pushed the timeline out 2 weeks. Okay. Now we're aware of that as a team. We get it. All right, fine. Right. You come back the next week and the next week and the next week and it's still yellow. Then it goes red. Like you can't ignore it, right? It's like putting that speed machine that you see on the side of the road in your office once a week, once a month and going, you know, speed check. How are you doing? Do you need to speed up? Do you need to slow down? So that autonomous external feedback loop is far more powerful than what we do in our heads. It's why the speedometer on the dashboard doesn't slow us down, but the speed box, when we drive by it, grabs our attention and we regulate our behavior. And that's the important point. All the change and the energy and the time and the momentum we've talked about, what we're talking about is the system to regulate the application of time, energy, and capital. So you're doing it in a conscious and committed way. And when you take actions or don't, Lyle, you're doing it confidently, understanding the circumstances, the conditions, right? And you know you've gone through, even if it's 30 seconds, a quick process of like, hey, am I willing to put this out next week so that we can tell this client, that this prospect, they don't have to wait 2 weeks for their first meeting. Now, It'll next give... time you might decide differently. You might be like, hey, I'm going to make this guy wait a week, but you might not. It's that sitting in the moment and getting awareness and then making the decision that is the most powerful part of the exercise, right? Being the regulator.
It'll give me the opportunity to recognize whether whatever I'm quote unquote reprioritizing is really something I'm reprioritizing for fits, or if I'm hiding from doing something I thought was uncomfortable, which is, you know, again, by the way, to that point, I have a very quick, funny story about the whole fee raise concept. This is a very scary thing for anybody who has thought about doing it, but has never done it. Liz knows, she's done it. It's piece of cake. No problem. When you're on the back end of it, it's easy for everybody. So I tell Jamie, our CA, that this is what we're going to do. And because obviously she's going to need to prepare the DocuSign paperwork. She's freaking out about it. So at our Bleakley retreat, Harold and Tracy are there who went through Limitless and did the fee raise earlier this year. So I asked them how it went. And they're like, oh, it was great. We sent out 37 emails. We got 2 phone calls and everybody signed 100%. It was not even a question. So wait, you sent out 37 emails only? Yeah. I said, okay, come here. I need you to tell Jamie that story. And I dragged them away from where they were. And I'm like, Jamie, you got to hear this story. Tracy, tell her about the fee raise. Lord.
Well, it's great. Sometimes, Liz, I think you went through this a bit. Tiff and Jared have gone through it. Like sometimes your staff, I say this with love, care too much. They're like, that servant's heart is like, you can't raise the fee or transition the client. That makes us evil money grubbers. And we've never been that. And who are you? You know, what's this Limitless program? What are they doing to you? And it's like, no, this is a business. We're allowed to make more, like we're allowed to, you know, bring our fees up to market levels and make sure we have profits to sustain the, like, but they really can get, like, they take ownership of that piece. You're like, well, I wish you would take that good ownership of all the other stuff, right? They really can get locked into the, oh, this is not a good thing. And it's funny because they're getting paid no matter what. That's the hilarious part. But it shows how conditioned people and their behavior can
get. Like, you know, if we do it and all our clients leave, then there won't be revenue to pay me anymore. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of that fear too.
There's a survival instinct. Yeah.
I'm scared for you. And I'm like, we're going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that there's concern there. And again, right, your job is to provide the information so that you can make good choices and they'll figure it out. Liz went through the same thing. And no one died and they made, you know, 6 figures more in income and, you know, everyone was the benefactor of that. And on the other side, everyone thinks it's the best thing ever. So it is, we call them white knuckle moments. And Adam will tell you, Tiff and Jared, Harold and Tracy on the other side, 99% of the time. And I just say that because I like to, you know, not make guarantees. But it hasn't happened yet. 99.99% of the time, it's, I wish I would have done that sooner. It was a non-event. It was like maybe one or two people asked or I got a little, but in the grand scheme of things, I just improved my ability to run a good business. Like, wow, imagine that. And clients did not run screaming from the building. So kudos to you because that's a big leap. And it's good for her to hear it from other people that you're probably not going to get eaten by. But literally to people, this kind of change is the equivalent of not just getting eaten by a tiger. It's like walking over to the tiger's cage, opening its mouth and sticking your head in on purpose. And the team sometimes looks at you and go, why would you do that? You're putting your head in the tiger's mouth. And it's because we know that for the most part, the tiger's not going to eat us. And right, we're going to have a better circus when it's all done. So good. I love that progress. Awesome.
Yeah, it can also be helpful to share with the team, right, the reasoning behind it and what's going on. We did that with the team once. We said, hey, we ran the numbers. The opportunity cost here is $70,000 a year. That's another client service person to support you so that you can grow into your goal of being the operations manager. And she went, oh, okay, well, I'm good now. I'd love to do that. That would be great. I do.
Well, this goes to the compensation strategy, right? We're aligning incentives because you can't motivate people with compensation, not for any per period of time. You can demotivate people, right? And compensation isn't just cash, it's involvement. And again, we'll talk a ton about that next year, but Lyle, I'm really glad to see that you guys have a process in place. I like to see that it's working. And definitely would look at those weeklies and monthlies just at speed check-in, right? Like, They have one in my neighborhood. Every time I drive to the grocery store, it's right there. It's awesome because I'm always like, oh, look, 27 and a 25. Okay, got to slow that baby down a little bit. Right? It's that external feedback loop that's really, really helpful. So hopefully that helps you guys just think about business planning as we, right, as we kind of roll into the back end of the year. This is obviously, if you want to take time and right, enjoy yourself and the holidays, that's great. And this is also a clarity time where we use the last 60 days of the year to really reflect on the progress that we've made, the wins, the things we still need to account for, and really ask ourselves what's our system for ensuring that we can execute on creating those new levels of success. Because we know if we have a system, as Natalie's been hearing me say for 30 years now, the system will save you. The system will always save you. Right? The more we rely on the system, the more it becomes normal operating behavior. And I think you guys could already see things that you would have never thought about doing before are now things that seem like old hat and you would never go back, right? Lie on the other side of the fee increase, you're going to feel the same way as everybody be like, wow, why didn't I do that before? So let us know how we can help, whether it's implementing your business plans or on the priorities. I think Sandy sent out the link. I think everyone on this call has scheduled, Lana and Travis, maybe you have not scheduled a November call yet. If you want one, you should have that information in your inbox. If there's anything else we can do to support you in November, please don't hesitate to reach out. Our next call on the 20th, as I shared, we're going to be revisiting a very cool lesson on drawing out your future to double or triple your growth, and then how we can use that to keep ourselves and our teams inspired as we put plans and priorities to those visions and kick off next year. So looking forward to that conversation with you. And if you guys need anything, as always, please don't hesitate to reach out. I and the coaching team are here to help you make the most of your year. Everyone have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Steph, I believe Travis and I are on your schedule, and I think it's for this week, two appointments.
Right. Yeah, I know Sandy said a couple people hadn't, and I wasn't sure if you were on the list.
Okay, awesome. Just to make sure.
No worries.
Have a great day.
Are you guys ever getting back in your office?
We still don't know yet. We're crossing our fingers. But we have met our seven-year anniversary for Steward Partners, so we are fully vested at this point going forward. So
congratulations, that's great for you. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, good. So exciting good things ahead for you in 2024.
You definitely
too, you got some big momentum going, Lyle.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention I'm in with you on Thursday afternoon. So
oh, perfect. All right, then I will talk to you.
I will see you in a couple days.
All right,
thanks. You guys. Okay, great.
Make it a great week, Natalie. Thanks for your time and participation today.
Thanks, Natalie. Bye.